I always liked the song that we did a few minutes ago, Sing On You Joyful Pilgrims. I think since I was little. Because I always visualize these people on this journey and walking together, and you know, with every step that they take, they're getting closer to a goal. And their whole, their effort is to not stop and put down roots in this world because they're going somewhere else. And we have a, my family has a relative who is nearing the end of his goal right now. He's a pilgrim. And we just got a call before we got here tonight that he is taking his last breath probably in the next few hours. And so I'd ask you to please remember them in your prayers, and that God would comfort that, the family. But we sing on because that's where we're going. And ultimately it's a blessing if we're prepared. And the lesson tonight is in one sense related to that, I guess, distantly, is because it's a lesson that calls upon us not to allow ourselves to be distracted and lose a sense of our selves, of being pilgrims and where we're going, being distracted by things in this world. And it's so easy to do that. I guess it was probably 1991 or 1992 when I was living in Kentucky and at the Church of Douglas Hills, and Gary Henry, I first met Gary Henry, who you know very well, and he came and did a series of studies that week, and it was called How the Devil is Hurting Us Now. Maybe some of you have heard some of those studies. Hope not. Because it was the one meeting that probably impacted me more than anyone that I've ever heard. That's unusual when things stick with you that long. But those lessons were so potent. And one was he's hurting us in our shortage of personal evangelism. That was one of the lessons he did. And another was on materialism, but that's the way he's hurting us in our generation. And we studied about that. Vance did a good class as we got to mull that over and think about that some for a quarter. The other one that he did was a lesson called Our Fascination with Fun. And I'm going to sort of give you the essence of that lesson tonight. I'm not going to do the whole thing because it was an hour and a half long on a Sunday night. But I'll tell you what, nobody went to sleep. That was a lesson that made us all sit there and think. It was very well done. And so I'm going to give you a little bit of the essence of that tonight. Paul wrote that in the last days people would be lovers of self, or lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. And in our country, one of the biggest, maybe the biggest of big businesses in our nation is fun. Leisure, amusement, play, and all the ways that that served up to us in all of its forms. Art, entertainment, sports, hobbies, crafts, travel. It would be impossible to begin to estimate the time and the money and the interest that we invest in these activities as a nation. One of the quotations was that he had was in 1988, over 100 amateur athletes were asked this question. If you could take a drug that would guarantee that you'd win an Olympic gold medal but would kill you within the year, would you take that drug? And more than half of them said yes. All of us know that's a problem in our society. But nobody argues how much it's affected society around us. But how about us? How much impact has fun had on those of us who are the Lord's people? Do we consider how powerful a tool that is in the hands of the devil to hinder us in the Lord's work? Now, let me say this at the outset, before you roll your eyes and bristle and get too upset, that recreation in and of itself is not wrong. It was God, not the devil, who created pleasure. Whatever the sinful pleasures there are, they are simply counterfeits of some good thing that God had created in the beginning for us to enjoy according to his will. I want to start with just 3 points tonight. What recreation was meant to be, what we've made out of recreation, and then thirdly, the consequences of what we've done. with recreation. First of all, what recreation was meant to be. It was meant to be a source of replenishment from our labors. You can go back and find recreation in the book of Genesis in chapter 2 in the Garden of Eden. You know, there was work to be done. God put man in the garden and gave him the task to cultivate the garden and to keep it. But God also knew that man would need things that would give enjoyment. And he provided for those needs. He provided seasons. He provided a beautiful environment. He provided things that were stimulating to the sight, the delights to the eyes, food for our appetite. He provided companionship. He said in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 8, the Lord planted a garden toward the east in Eden. He placed man there. And out of the garden he caused to grow every tree that is pleasing to sight and good for food. I mean, he made these things for our enjoyment. He made things that would give us, attend to our needs. God knew that we need rejuvenated so that we can be productive. And how many of us know that there's a certain point when we're working and we just reach a point of no return? I mean, we get to a point and our brain just shuts down and says, I'm done. I'm not working anymore. You are going to rest. And we need that. And God knew that we needed that as well. And so recreation replenishes our energy. It gives us pleasure in doing things that are different from our routine work. And I think the Bible teaches that happiness and pleasure and merriment, even fun, are gifts of God to man. Let's read a couple of verses regarding that in the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes, we'll start chapter 5 and verse 18. And this is sort of a reoccurring theme that Solomon keeps coming back to as he goes through this book. It's a cyclical type thing. And he says that here's what I've seen, this is chapter 5 verse 18, to be good and fitting, to eat, to drink, and to enjoy oneself in all of one's labor in which he toils under the sun during a few years of his life which God has given him. For this is his reward. Or maybe back in chapter 3 in verse 12 and 13, he had said, I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all of his labor. It is a gift of God. And then the passage we probably know best at the end of Ecclesiastes chapter 11, when he says to the young man in verse 9, Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 9, he says, rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood. Follow the impulses of your heart, the desires of your eyes. Yet know that God will bring you into judgment for all these things. But remove vexation from your heart. Put away pain from your body, because childhood and prime of life are fleeting. So he encourages us to enjoy life. These things are the gifts of God. And then two Proverbs, one in Proverbs 15, Proverbs 13, verse 15. I think it's chapter 15, verse 13. 15, 13 says, a joyful heart makes a cheerful face, but when the heart is sad, the spirit is broken. And then verse 15 says, all the days of the afflicted are bad, but a cheerful heart has a continual feast. And then in chapter 17 and verse 22, he adds, a joyful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit dries up the bones. These are things that God made, gifts for us, the pleasures and the recreation in life. To everything there's a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance. So that's what recreation was meant to be, created by God, meant to replenish our energies, give us, joy and in a life that's full of toil, largely, and difficulties. He gave us things that would help us in that. However, what have we made out of recreation? What have we made out of recreation? First of all, we've made that which was to be a secondary part of life the primary thing. It's an error anytime we take a good thing that was meant to be a part of life and exaggerate it and make it more important than it was meant to be. What we've done with recreation is comparable to what children would like to do with dessert at a mealtime. They like to elevate a treat to the status of the main course. Secondly, we've made fun into a god in our nation. Entertainment, recreation, and anything that we come to love and treat as more important than God is idolatry. We pay entertainers and sports stars far more money than anyone else in our society. Surely that makes some kind of comment on how important these things are and have become to us. And it's almost sacrilege to say it, but our emphasis even on physical fitness has come to a level that's not healthy for us. There's obviously value in bodily exercise, and I'm not trying to convince anybody to quit their diets or stop exercising, but it pales in comparison to the profit of godliness. And we know the passage that when Paul told Timothy that bodily exercise profits a little, but godliness is profitable for all things, having promise of the life that now is and that which is to come. There are some things that are good, and there are other things that are far better, and that our godliness far outweighs the benefits of bodily exercise. Another thing that we've done is that we have devoted an inordinate amount of attention to our fun. We think about it too much. For some, it's more than just a preoccupation. It's an obsession. Spiritual things need to get more of our attention. And Paul said that. Colossians chapter 3, the book of Colossians in chapter 3 and verse 1 and 2. He says, "If then you have been raised up with Christ, then keep seeking the things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on the things that are on the earth." We spend billions of dollars and hours in recreational and entertainment activity. I wonder, and of course everybody can only answer this for themselves, if we have not at some points borrowed money on credit cards, if not otherwise, for fun and entertainment. How many of us would borrow money to supply the needs in the Lord's work? Do we make bigger sacrifices and endure greater hardships for our fun than for anything else in our lives, including the Lord's work? Another thing, we have allowed fun to gain too much power over us. Are we serving it, or is it serving us? It is understandable if we're not Christians. The Bible says, in Titus chapter 3 and verse 3, he says, "For we ourselves were also once foolish and disobedient and deceived and serving various lusts and pleasures, living in malice and envy and hateful and hating one another." It's understandable if we were consumed with those various things before we were Christians. But what is our excuse after we become Christians? I wonder if to the Lord sometime we look like we are lambs that are being led to the slaughter. We also tend to judge nearly everything by its entertainment value, by how fun it is. Even things that were never meant to be judged by that standard. Even the Lord's work, sometimes we are demanding to be entertained. You know what a good sermon is? You know what a good Bible class is? They are automatically equated with those that are interesting. If we say that a teaching presentation was boring or it's dry, we believe that we've said the worst thing that can be said about it. The truth is, the Lord's work simply can't compete with temporal activities at the level of fun. And it's a mistake to try to make it do that. Paul in Lystra and Derbe and Iconium and Corinth, you wouldn't classify that as fun or entertaining or even interesting. Those words just don't fit. That was something that was an eternal nature, and they certainly don't fall into the category of fun. Our demand that the church interest us is just as childish as the toddler's insistence that his parents must keep him entertained. The truth is, keeping ourselves interested in the Lord's work is our own responsibility. And when somebody complains about preaching and says, well, it just doesn't hold my attention. Well, you know what? That's their fault. It's not mine. Or the whoever the preacher is. It's my job to keep myself awake. It's my job to keep myself focused. And it puts pressure on the preacher when he feels like, you know, people expect entertainment, you know. And sometimes I succumb to that. I think, boy, is this interesting enough? Am I making very good statements? Am I saying things in a way that's going to keep everybody awake and attentive? That's completely carnal. It's completely carnal. That is not what my obligation is. It's, you know, my obligation is to present the truth in the best way possible, and then listeners are to listen with an ear for eternity. But it's very challenging in our day. Our attitude toward fun is sometimes remarkably similar to a child's. It's a matter of principle with us that fun equals good, and good equals fun. We insist that everything must be fun, or we just won't participate in it. We put others on notice that if they expect to hold our attention, they must do or say things that are entertaining. What have we made out of recreation? Well, there's four words that fit what we have made out of recreation. One is dissipation, defined as dissolute indulgence in pleasure and intemperance. We've made recreation into indulgence in our society, the act of allowing oneself unrestrained gratification. Debauchery is another word that fits what we've made out of recreation. Extreme indulgence, the act of being led away from excellence or virtue. And then decadence, the state of having deteriorated or decayed morally. That's what we've made out of recreation in our nation. Well, quickly, what are some consequences of what we've done with recreation? And this is a shorter sermon because my physical being is telling me I'm not going to preach very long tonight. So I made a short one for you. What consequence are the consequences of what we've done with recreation? First of all, our fascination with fun is connected to most problems that we have in the Lord's work. It is one reason why we have to work overtime. It's one reason we're so much in debt and have so little money for the Lord's work. It's not only our children who have to have expensive toys and enjoy expensive fun, but we adults do the same thing as they do. Addiction to temporal enjoyments is sometimes to blame when we run out of money to take care of ourselves. And Proverbs says, he who loves pleasure will be a poor man, and he who loves wine and oil will not be rich. The second thing is it's created problems within our families. When it comes to our spiritual health as families, there's a sense in which we're entertaining and recreating ourselves to death. To judge by the time and the money that we spend on our various activities, some of us as parents appear to be more concerned about the athletic success of our children than we are about their spiritual welfare. Organized sports for young people have gotten completely out of hand, and they were of questionable value to begin with. When kids, you know, miss services because of athletic activities, we make a statement, not only to them, about ourselves, but to them. We tell them what is most important. When push comes to shove, then God is the one that's going to have to take second place. And if we're teaching them to be pilgrims, traveling from here to heaven, and that's the goal, then at some point they're going to have to learn to make sacrifices with things in this world that are going to keep them from making those right choices. And putting sports as a priority, or entertainment, or some type of recreational activity as a priority over worship and assemblies is just the way to misalign their priorities for when they're older. The next thing is that the consequence of what we've done with recreation is one reason that we stay overcommitted and have so little time for the Lord's work. We're driving ourselves crazy trying to have it all and to do it all. We work at our play, we play at our worship, and we worship our work. We're being dangerously foolish if we think that there's time in life to pursue every interest that appeals to us without our part in the Lord's work suffering. another thing that we've done is it's one reason that we have little time for personal evangelism. Think about that for just a minute. Any number of us probably are involved in some way in some type of sports activities. Not that they're wrong with and of themselves. That's not my point at all. But they require a lot of times at least one night a week. But how many of us spend one night a week in personal evangelism? The fact is, the reason many of us do not have as much time as one night a week for personal evangelism is that we have so many recreational and entertainment obligations. If the congregation here decided, the elders decided, to begin a program of personal work that required exactly the same number of evenings a week as our softball leagues, how many of us would insist that that was an unreasonable demand? How many of us would insist that that was unreasonable to do? At the deepest level, our problem is our heart is in our fun. However clean it is in our fun more than it is in the Lord's work. All too often we display a first-rate devotion to second-rate things. Sometimes the Lord's people are simply not as interested in the Lord's work as they are in things that are more fun. What would those who know us well say our real passions and enthusiasms are? What would they say really is our passion and our enthusiasm in life? What is it that really turns us on? Recreation or the Lord's work? What does the evidence suggest? How many of us can say that we have never forsaken the assembling of the saints for a sports event or an entertainment activity? Might we not sometimes be, despite our protests, to the contrary, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God? We need to better learn how to set our minds on things above instead of things in this world. Well, in 1 Corinthians 10, if you look there, when Paul wrote the Corinthians, he reminded them of something that took place in the Old Testament, when the children of Israel had left Egypt and came to the mountain, and Moses had got the Ten Commandments, but he stayed up on the mountain too long, 40 days, I think it was 40 days, and they sort of got panicky, didn't know what to do about that. So they demanded that Aaron make them a god so that they could worship. And so he obliged, he formed a golden calf for them. And when Paul observed the attitudes and the priorities of the Corinthians, he saw that incident as a fair application of the problem that these Corinthians were headed towards. And so he pulled that forward and he said to them, if you start in chapter 10 there, in verse 1, he says, "I don't want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the same cloud and passed through the sea, were baptized into Moses and the cloud and the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food. They drank the same spiritual drink. They were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them. The rock was Christ. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased, for they were laid low in the wilderness. Now these things have happened as an example for us, that we should not crave evil things as they also crave, and do not be idolaters as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink, and they stood up to play. Nor let us act immorally as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in one day. Nor let us try the Lord as some of them did, and were destroyed by the serpents." And he goes on and just lists a number of things that provoke God's anger. It seems like he has just a list of various things. And we probably could look through some of those things and say, "That's not me. And that's not me. And that's not me." Because some of them were evil things that they were a part of. And we may not be a part of any evil thing. And some of them were acting immorally. And we may not be acting immorally in any way. But in verse 7, when he says, "Do not be idolaters as some as they were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink, and they stood up to play." Can we help not but to think of ourselves when we read of that passage? That sometimes characterizes us. Israel sat down to eat and drink, and they rose up to play. They were obsessed with self-indulgence. Not just that generation, but many generations after that. Isaiah, we read this back in chapter 5 the other night on a Wednesday night, where he said, "Woe to those who rise early in the morning that they may follow intoxicating drink, and who continue until night, till wine inflames them, the harp and the strings, the tambourine and the flute, the wine are in their feasts, but they don't regard the work of the Lord." Now you can cross off intoxicating drink there, or the wine, and say, we don't do that. But the essence of that is that they were consumed with personal indulgence, the things that they indulged themselves in, and they were disconcerned with the Lord. That same problem that characterized Israel back at the mountain still characterized them in Isaiah's day. And in the first century, it characterized the Corinthians. Does it characterize us as well? Jesus warned in the parable of the soils that there would be some where the seed would fall among the thorns, and those who, when they had heard, would go out and be choked with the cares and riches and pleasures of life and bring no fruit to maturity. They would receive the word, and it would go into them, and they would take it in, and they'd be excited about it. But they wouldn't have time for it. It would never develop into anything because they were so consumed with the cares and the riches and the pleasures of this life. It would never reach maturity. There are reputable historians who argue that one factor in the fall of the Roman Empire was a weakness of the Roman people that had been produced by overindulgence in banqueting and entertainment and athletic contests. I think, what seeds are we sowing for the future of this church? What are our children going to see? How will they perceive their parents? How do they think about me with this? My dad was consumed with what? What was it that consumed him? Amos said, "Woe to you who put far off the day of doom, who cause the seed of violence to come near, who lie on your beds of ivory, stretched out on your couches, eating lambs from the flock and calves from the midst of the stall, who chant to the sound of stringed instruments and invent for yourselves musical instruments like David, who drink wine from bowls and anoint yourselves with the best ointments, but you're not grieved for the affliction of Joseph." Would Amos have preached that to us? Would he have said that we're so consumed with our luxuries and our pleasures that we are completely oblivious to the affliction of Joseph, to the sins of the people? God created pleasure, and he wants us to enjoy our life. And he's given us, in this world, things to enjoy. That's what God made. It's his gift to us. But the things that are nourishing in the proper helpings can be deadly if we choke ourselves on them. The number of the Lord's people who are choked with the pleasures of life is one of the worst problems we have right now. And that's what Jesus was warning about in the parable of the sower. So, in view of that, thinking about the problem that we can have with our fascination with fun, what real specific changes are we prepared to make to put recreation back in balance with other things and spend more time on spiritual priorities? The thing that is wrong is not fun. It is our fascination with fun. It is our near obsession with it. For some of us, it's already killed us. For some of us, we're just like the widow in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 6. The person who lives in pleasure is dead spiritually, even while they are alive physically. Where are we? We have to crucify ourselves. We have to think about being pilgrims, like that song said. We have to think about that we're on a journey, and that this isn't the place where we're supposed to put our roots down. And we're not supposed to be obsessed and consumed with the things that we have in this world. But we're to be keeping our vision and our sight set on future things, on heavenly things. We're going to stand and sing in just a minute. 390, anywhere with Jesus, I can safely go. Would he go with us where we go? Would he approve of our lives? Would he approve of the amount of fun that we have? Have we got it in the right balance, or do we need to rebalance things? Maybe tonight we need to rethink that, what our priorities are, and follow him more closely, make him a priority in our life. And if you need to become a Christian, that would be a this would be a good time to do that while we stand and sing our song.